Here we go, Morning Wood Radio, 7 a.m., coming at you live on this beautiful Monday morning with your host, Hunt the Sheriff, and our guest host today, co-host, the OG of hybrid athletics, Mr. Alex. How are we doing today, everyone?
That's a good start, Ryan.
That was a good start, man.
So just off the top of the dome.
I'm pretty much hyped now.
Yeah. Dude, so I like to ask people this. I think you'd be one of the more interesting people to ask because I've looked up to you for a long time. Morningwood Radio, the reason why I started the podcast was that morning energy, the power that you get in the morning, just bursting out of bed. And I'm always curious with a high-level performer like yourself, what is the thing that gets you out of the bed these days?
Oh, my God, man. You know, it's funny because I think earlier in my career, it was the list of things I wanted to do on any given day and the list of things I want to achieve, the list of things that just actually excite me was always so much bigger, I think, than I had the room for in my head when I went to sleep. It was the kind of thing where I used to consider myself a real night owl, right? Like nighttime was when I did my best thinking and clarity and everything else. But nighttime was so isolating for me. And it's like, it's this introverted time, right? It's the time when you quietly sit and you can meditate and everything starts to go silent around you. And for me, that's when I come up with ideas. But my thought always was Monday was a time when you actually make all those ideas actually happen. That's your first chance to actually do something. Nighttime for me was like, I can plan. I can think about the future. I can think about what I want to do. I have that time of like quiet contemplation. And then you get excited for the morning because the morning is when you actually put it all into action. That's the chance to do all those things that you wanted to do the night before. And that's
I think you and I live on two different spectrums because I wake up and I have superpowers in the morning. And by the end of the day, my brain is totally effed. Like I'm done. I'm tapped out. There's been so many things that have happened to me throughout the day that I have no bandwidth by the end of the evening. Like I have to go to bed early so that I can use that energy in the morning. But I do understand the isolation and thinking. I think that's why I live in the mountains. I maybe think that you live out in isolation because, you know, that quote from Hunter S. Thompson, you'll never find reasonable men on top of tall mountains. Like you have to remove yourself and put yourself in rare places to get to these kind of rare and exceptional kinds of performances and thoughts. So you're in the desert and you stay up late at nighttime. I'm on top of mountains and I wake up early in the morning. So different hours.
Same thing. You go outside, you're just surrounded by that silence.
So I just got a curiosity. Have you always been a Southern California desert man, or is there something that just kind of just has brought you deeper and deeper into the woods?
Man, probably like lifetime crisis. Dude, I was like coming out of college. I was actually in Manhattan working for a little bit. And then I worked down in Durham, North Carolina in the Research Triangle for years and years. So for me, it was always just like big city and then suburbs. And I think as time has gone on, I think I've gotten what I wanted to from cities and more crowded places and just slowly moved my way further and further out. I mean, like future at this point, thinking about moving out to, you know, like Northern Idaho or something in the middle of nowhere. And just kind of getting further and further from civilization. But, you know, you can stay connected so much more these days, too. Because the thing about cities, the thing about all that was, like, you never wanted to be too far from reality. You never wanted to be too far from peers and too far from family and all that. But, you know, now with connection the way it is, you really don't have to be. And it's nice, I think, especially as I get older, and I'm sure you understand this, sometimes to be able to turn off the noise, just be able to, like, close the screen and go outside, and all of that chaos, all of that input, all of that constant stimulation is just gone.
And dude, I was just talking with a group of people the other day, and we're sitting down and we're kind of just talking through, I don't know, everyone's kind of bringing up their thing. Like some people are like, I like breath work. I like meditation. I'm like, I don't do any of that. I do my very best to disappear like one or two times a week. And then I pack my schedule. So after my world championships every year, I take 2 to 3 weeks off and I go hiking in the woods.
Yeah.
And I will come back with more energy and more psychological freedom than I have like at any other point in time in the year.
Yeah.
And getting away from all the distraction points allows me to actually think at a high level, come creative, come back as a better, more positive person. And I don't know if I am going to become like the Unabomber and like disappear deep in the woods. But I fear for that
terrorist activity.
Yeah. I don't want to hurt anybody, but I do almost feel like the more I learn about the world, the less I want to be a part of it.
It's so funny. Like, first off, I love that idea of just going out, because for me, every Saturday, I just head out to Anza Borrego, to the desert. Yep. And for a long time, it was a routine, especially in the middle of the summer when it's like 1:15 and no other humans out there, because, you know, everything's dead. Just go out, just find a good trail to go hit for like an hour or two, maybe three. And it's just, you know, since it, talk about like complete silence, like nothing else can live out there. So it is, it's that same sort of thing though. You go out and it is such complete, just you, your brain, and that's it. And I don't know, it's cleansing in a way, but man, it's funny what you say though, like getting further and further away from like civilization and talking about, oh, you know, you see all the ills and problems and, you know, your brain starts to go, maybe we just need a reset button. And then you're like, oh man.
I say this all the time, but if you say that publicly, then all of a sudden it's like, wait a second, maybe you're the problem. I'm like, No. I'm trying to say I'm stepping out.
Exactly.
I think I would love to just keep on shooting the shit with you because it's easy to flow with you. And I think we have a lot of similar mindsets, but I think we really got to set the tone of who we're talking to here.
Who are you?
Yeah, basically. Interestingly enough, so we do this every week and we set up ahead of time notes so that people can come in and ask questions about the questions about the desks, kind of add direction to it. You, of anybody in the year and a half that we've been doing this, have gotten more feedback than anybody else I have ever posted about. I've had people, all my friends, calling me, say, ask him about this. Ask him about this. So you're kind of like this folklore legend that I think a lot of people know about. And maybe don't have the street cred or like the followers to really represent some of the impact that you've had on the community. I mean, I think I found out about you maybe for the first time, maybe in 2012 to 2014. I don't know if that's it. Yeah. I remember reading kind of like these, like hearing these stories around the gym of a dude who can run a sub 20, 420 mile and deadlift in the high hundreds. And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? And you're like, yeah, his name's Alex Viada. And then all of a sudden, back then, the internet was so shitty, you'd like type it in and there's just like this really buff picture of you in a couple sentences.
And that was it, right?
That was it. That was it. And you're like, so where else do you get information about this guy? You're like, well, he lives deep into the woods. You're never going to find him. He hasn't graced us with his presence in a decade. And so from what I understand, and I let's make this a conversation because that's the most exciting part about this. You have been a person, and I don't know where it all started. That's a curiosity for me. You were a person who seemed to have hit this bandwidth. If we're talking about opposite sides of the spectrum of athleticism, you're talking about a guy who has this massive power potential, you know, quick 40, high vertical, big power lifts, you know, really intense tension and explosive tension. And then you're talking about this other end of the spectrum where you're looking at like the Ingebrigtsens and the marathoners and the Jan Frodenos and things like that, who have this spectacular engine that allows you to efficiently move a body through time and space. Mm-hmm. Now, finding somewhere in the middle is where this title of the hybrid athlete is. And I was reading an article about you and you said that used to just be called being in shape. Now it's this term hybrid athlete. Yep. And whatever, people need buzzwords to keep themselves motivated. Just to give us some understanding, like where did your journey start and where did you start to refine this and build upon it and then widen it?
Well, so my main thing was I was like going all through middle school, high school, like I was a really, in terms of athletics, I was incredibly, incredibly mediocre at everything, but like universally mediocre. And I think what I always enjoyed growing up was just dabbling in a little bit of everything. You know, played football, played soccer, swam, ran track, played tennis, played a little bit of lacrosse, played terrible ice hockey. Like was pretty much always just interested and knew something new, new challenge, new form of athleticism. To me, like every sport, every dimension of athleticism, it's like learning a language. And what was so fascinating about it for me was trying to, you know, dabbling and then mastering some new sport to the point where you felt incredibly good at it. That constant, you know, acquiring new skills, meeting new kinds of athletes, learning what makes them tick, finding new mindsets that get people excited. It's just finding new mountains to climb. And even if you never climb the biggest ones, you know, you never go on to play a sport professionally, you get that exposure to it and you come away from it having learned so much more. So that was my early experience in athletics. So I went to college, pretty much forgot everything. I discovered beer pong and that was about it. And it's a great sport, man. I mean, talk about like decision under duress. And so came back to it after college. Like I said, gained a bunch of weight, lost a bunch of weight, but I got really just into strength training again. I missed it. I missed just being active. So I got into powerlifting, wanted to get really strong. And at that time, like we're talking 2002, was really, really the whole mindset around strength training and bodybuilding and powerlifting was, this is your sport. All that other stuff you used to do, all the running, all the cardio, all of that was antithetical to it. And you'll never be any good if you do any of that. So for me, the mindset at that time was anybody associated with strength sport had to give all of that up. And I definitely did. And I think as a couple of years went on, and as I got stronger and I got better at that side of things, I said, oh, I really got a knack for this. I realized how much I was missing out on that type of athleticism. And, you know, the singular sort of challenge that you can only get from, you know, lung burning, just absolutely turning yourself inside out, like, or even just the zen of like a long, easy run or, you know, going out for a mountain bike ride for a couple hours. Like, I just missed that. Yep. And so I got back into that, and everything at the time from people and colleagues and other professionals was all just doom and gloom. You know, this is going to make you weak. You're going to be terrible at all of it. So, you know, why are you giving up your progress in this? And that was it then, that discouragement, that constant discouragement that just made me go, all right, hell with you guys. Like, I want to show that you can be good at both. And to their credit at first, they were absolutely right. Like, I did everything wrong. You know, just tried to pile on more and more work. And, you know, like, you've only got so much recovery, especially if you're newer to a sport. If you just keep throwing it on and throwing it on, you're going to crush yourself. So I did, but then I spent probably years and years trying to find ways to actually make it all balance. And that's where this whole idea came from, was the whole idea was as much an outreach as anything else. It was much a, you know, finger in the air at a lot of the establishment at the time that was saying you had to specialize, you had to pick one or the other, or you were never going to be anything approaching elite in anything. So that was kind of where it started. And that was kind of the environment that I jumped into. And really the huge uphill battle was trying to convince people that this was actually valid, that you could actually do this.
So when were your breakthrough moments? Because you had to have had something. Like, I remember when I first started training, I dropped out of college. Mm-hmm. I was a cross country runner in high school. It was never spectacular, like regional level guy. And then I went to New York City and I started modeling, and I was like, I saw these pictures and I didn't know that they were editing them all, but I was like, everyone's so ripped. So I was like in the gym constantly, and I'm downstairs, and it was like one of these basement gyms called Synergy, I think on like 92nd and 2nd. And these dudes, like, you know, half the dudes were on juice. You're sitting there. I'm weighing maybe, he's a thick bastard. I'm weighing maybe 180 pounds, and I'm down there, and these guys are telling me, like, you're doing all this sissy cardio, blah, 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 because I wanted to stay lean and cut at all time for my pictures, and I'd just be out there pounding out miles, but then I'd be in the gym lifting weights, and I was kind of just the training was kind of redundant. Like, nothing was ever getting better.
Yeah.
And I remember I just was, like, always, like, stuck at, like, maybe like 185 pounds to 205 pounds on bench. I was always stuck at like the 5.5 to 450 mile type thing. And it just stayed there and was just like flat for a while.
Yeah.
For so long. And then all of a sudden, I think my breakthrough moment was, I don't know where I went. I think it was when I went to California and all of a sudden I picked up the high intensity training book by Mike Mentzer.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed it. I was like, oh, wait a second. Maybe I'm doing too much.
Yep.
And so where was that for you? Where was that shift? Because I was doing it all. I was in the gym. I was working out three times a day. where did you all of a sudden go bump? And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, mile time's dropping, weights are going up. Was there a book? Was there a time? Was there an event? Was there a girl? Yeah. What was the catalyst?
I mean, actually it was actually a girl that challenged me to a 5K that got me really started a lot of it in the first place. But
dude, what happens, dude. You bump into a girl, they can either destroy you or they can build you up.
Dude, I thought I was in good shape. And then she was like, hey, you want to go for a training run? And we went for a training run. And I was like, man, I feel awesome. And like 200 meters in, I definitely had to fake a calf cramp because I was dying. We were supposed to go out for like 4 miles. I hadn't run more than like half a mile in God knows how long. And so that's where I was like, oh man, no, yeah, you go on ahead without me. For me, honestly, the biggest thing when it came to the weight training side of things was I spent more time actually reading about and reading from the West Side guys. And I know that sounds almost odd because, you know, that's about as much on the strength training side of things as you can get. But what I really liked was when I was reading the West Side guys and really going back and looking at a lot of their influences, I started reading things like Super Training, Mel Siff. And if anyone's ever told you, by the way, that, oh yeah, like I read Super Training once, they're absolutely lying, because that book is, you probably have to read it like 8 or 9 times.
First, it's a freaking huge book.
Yeah, first you read it through cover to cover, and then you realize that none of that made any sense. So then you kind of start in the middle and work your way backwards, and then start in the middle and work your way. Anyway, you got to read a million times.
But it's anyways, the one with the weightlifter on the cover, right?
I think so, yeah. They've got a couple of editions at this point, but really brilliant stuff. And what I really appreciated about them was their idea that even something as simple as powerlifting, right? Like move big weight, lift up floor. You can break it down into so many different components. You can break it down. You can break down the training into the speed component, into the dynamic effort component, into the maximum effort component. You can look at the way you approach your training and dissect it in such a way that you're looking at the building blocks of athletics. You're looking at the building blocks of performance. And I think rather than just trying to hammer myself against the wall and say, okay, let's just get better at all this, I had to really start breaking it down. I had to start to think, okay, what is it that makes you strong? What are the different types of training? What is the purpose of every lift I'm doing in the gym when it comes to all the endurance work? What is the purpose of structuring an interval this way? What is the purpose of the long run? What is the purpose of this? What is the purpose of that? And I think just getting really ruthless and cutting out the noise and using that kind of framework and just approaching all training that way, approaching all training as not just looking at it as this huge spectrum of performance, but breaking it down into just component parts and saying, okay, it's not just how do I get better at running? It's what do I need to do specifically to be a faster runner right now? What's that going to involve in terms of what should my training focus be? Why am I doing sessions that don't actually get me closer to my objective? And I think really just a lot of that, a lot of their influence really just tightened up my training, made it a lot simpler. I mean, my whole thing was minimum effective dose plus one on everything, and you'll still progress.
Yeah. So, you know, Dr. Tudor Bappa?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like that, I got that book and I remember reading about you talking about periodization in this interview that I was reading. Mm-hmm. I think one of the most interesting things that I've ever run into is I don't think almost anybody knows what periodization means. And I think you have a lot of personal trainers, online trainers, people that are just like moving. It wasn't until I found out about periodization that I was able to start to understand like who I am now versus what I want to be, and like almost applying like a belt system to it, almost like I was in a karate dojo. And every single season, at the end of the season, I had to start back at a white belt. And I might have a notch on my white belt this time because I went through it, the system earlier, but I had to do A to get to B to get to C. And if I skipped B, C would be thin and I wouldn't be ready for C really. I may be training through the phase of C, but I didn't do B or I didn't do A or something like that. Was there a period of time where all of a sudden you came up with your own periodization method that was able to create this ability to continue to spread out wide, but also to increase vertically?
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of that was building off the old conjugate system, which is, I mean, conjugate is much more of a concurrent periodization, which kind of makes it not periodization if you think about it. But it was, the conjugate system and the whole idea of constantly evolving what is, for example, the major lift rotating through, maintaining all elements of sport performance while you at that time still lean into one or the other. So it was looking at that structure, and you know, a little bit like what you said about periodization, you got to go from A to get to B to get to C. You can't go into any kind of hybrid program and just say, all right, you know, it's time to get better at everything. You have to say, all right, if this is my objective, this is my objective on the running side, where am I honestly as a runner? And not only that, where am I in this new body type as a runner? Say you have an off season, you gain a lot of mass, you gain a lot of strength, you gain a lot of size. Your body has changed. Your gait patterns have changed. The amount of weight you're carrying around has changed. Your VO2 max is probably going to have changed. There are a lot of things that probably have changed. So you're going to have to go through that entire process of, you know, redeveloping your running proficiency at your new size or with these new parameters. So it was kind of this whole thing where, you know, for me, a lot of the conjugate periodization was you do want to elevate yourself as an athlete all around, but everything goes up in steps.
And you're I say that all the time. I call it the brick wall. You can't do bricks across this way, then across this way. Like you can, I slowly develop this side of the brick wall, and then I bring this side of the brick wall up. Then I go this side of the brick wall. And everyone's like, no, I want to build my bricks across. And I'm like, it's really not going to fucking work that way. And everyone has such an ego about it.
Yep. And I think to even to maintain that analogy, though, and you start just doing it too quickly as well, and quality gets sloppy. You build it up here. You make sure that it's intact. You don't steal bricks from here to put somewhere else either, because that's not going to get you anywhere, even though that looks good at the time. So you get people just, like you said, trying to build everything all at once. And it's just, you've got to be able to be willing to hold some things in kind of their current state and establish yourself and establish your athleticism there, and then do something else. And then say, okay, cool. I built this base on this side. I built this strength in the offseason I want to build. I built this side. And then now I can focus on this other area. But you can't give half-assed focus to everything.
It wasn't until I started working with Poliquin, this is years ago. I started reading about it, and then I started working with him. He would consult with me. And basically, he had me take 6 weeks off of all cardio completely.
Oh, my God.
And I went, in my strength, I just went, boom. I completely made this leap. And right around that time, I broke the 500-pound deadlifts. Like all these things. And I had no clue. The reference point that really inspired me to work with him was there was this topic where he started working with the Nordic skiers in Canada. Mm-hmm. They had never been on the podium before. And he sat down with all these guys. He goes, your power output shit. Your wattage is shit. You need to stop doing cardio. And they all freaked out. The next Olympic cycle, he had a couple medalists at the Olympics through Canada. And I said, F that, I'm all in. I was like, I want to be on the Olympics. And speaking of what you were saying earlier about the body type, and you were talking about the Olympics. I think this is the quote that I pulled from you. Boom, boom, boom. You mean like if someone said, I want to go to the Olympics for three different sports, and you laugh. For the first time, the first limit we put on people, we ask them is, what is your body type? So about a year ago, 2 years ago, I was like, you know what? I'm done with high rocks and all this kind of stuff. I think I really want to go to the Olympics and something. The first thing I had to ask myself is like, if I have to look at my body and put myself in any of those sports, which ones could I go with?
Yeah.
I think that's something that people need to hear. You cannot cheat your body. You can go places with your body, but you can't cheat it. I'm not going to ever be a shot putter. I don't think like my femurs are dense enough to transfer force through my thighs at a such and such. Like it's just not. And my, like, you know, and same with, if you look at my body type for the 1500, like you and I are never going to do anything in the 1500. Mm-hmm. But I think that so many athletes need to look at themselves and then start to build off of the avatar that they have. Like everybody starts almost like in a Dungeons and Dragons type world. Like if you have the body of a bard, you better pick up a guitar. but if you have the body of a barbarian, like go pick up a barbell, you have the chance of becoming like an absolute savage.
Yeah.
I remember seeing pictures of you back in the day when you were quite young. Like you definitely did not have the body you have now. what was your like biggest chunk of your transformation? Was it the food? Was it the lifting? Was it just time under tension and decades of such and such? Like, what was it for you?
Yeah, honestly, man, so when I was younger, when I was high school, I was always kind of just very mid physique. I was never super lean, never super fast, never super strong. But I think I really did discover that, you know, like later on in my career, I was definitely much more on the strength side of things. Like that was, I did put on muscle pretty easily, but never massive amounts. I would never be a bodybuilder. All my attachments are completely wrong. Like, you know, short muscle bellies, really good for power, really good for explosiveness, absolutely look terrible for bodybuilding. You know, I'm never going to be, you know, same thing. I also carry too much mass. I'm never going to be a marathon runner or anything else. When I started training seriously and was training like a bodybuilder and just, you know, thought I could just do endless long sets and all that, I never really got anywhere. I think when I started getting injured more than anything else, injured from a high volume approach, injured just from doing way too many lifts that I thought I was supposed to do. Honestly, it's when I got lazy, man. When I got kind of lazy and said, okay, you know, I got to stop doing movements that hurt. And I think there was such this conceit that if you want to be a strength athlete, you got to do this movement. You got to do that movement. You got to do a barbell squat. You got to do this. And people get very caught up in that. I think people get very caught up in thinking that they have to train one particular way to look or perform the way they want to perform. And rather than addressing, and this is kind of something I get into with my clients, rather than addressing the athlete in front of them, which is themselves, they're addressing the program that they think the athlete needs. And it's like, you've got to work with the athlete you've got. And so I started looking at myself and I'm like, all right, man, you know, this particular movement always bothers my shoulders. That's holding back my shoulder development. That's holding back my strength. Why does it bother my shoulders? Is it that I'm not doing it right? Or is it that it's just not a good movement for me?
Yeah.
And I think that's it. Like approaching myself as the puzzle to solve. And again, facing the athlete in front of me, which is me. That's when I started actually seeing significant changes.
Yeah. I almost never squat. Yeah. I will squat to a box. And I will do box squats, especially in season. In off season, I'll do things like 20 rep back squat programs and things like that. But I take out almost all running and endurance alongside of it. And it allows my thighs to actually put the amount of effort in that it takes to get improvement in that area. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't, like, I'm not double wrecking my quads through running and biking and all that kind of stuff. Other than that, I completely vaporize it from the program. And I'll get people on the internet that shit on me, be like, you can't squat to parallel, so on and so forth. And it's really interesting the amount of ego that goes in for people towards certain kinds of lifts and performances. Like, I lift out of power racks all the time. And for me, I don't know if you've ever run into this, but the difference between being a gym goer and an athlete hasn't really been differentiated on the internet. And like a strength training coach, like, you may understand it fully, but other people are just like, well, I saw Chris Bumsfeld benching, so I think I need to bench. I'm like, well, that's a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
That's a bodybuilder. You don't need anything. You just need your body to be able to hold tension, and you can do that through many different ways.
The arbitrariness, I think, of lifting in general is always one thing that's gotten to me. It's funny. I was just even having this conversation yesterday with somebody. There's such conceit about what a particular movement should be, or how particular people should lift, or what counts as this, or what qualifies as that. Like, don't get me wrong, I love the sport of powerlifting, but there are more ways to move a barbell than in a powerlifting movement. And, you know, again, if you're an athlete, if you have sport objectives, you need to be training and doing things in such a way that make you a better athlete.
Out of curiosity, now you've got me on something I wanted to ask you. Why do you sumo deadlift?
Because conventional deadlift screws up my back.
Okay.
I hate it. I've always been bad at conventional. Like, my conventional is about 100 pounds less than my sumo.
Yeah.
And
I just wonder, because there's no athletic movement like that. I give people like shit all the time. They're like, I want a sumo deadlift. I'm like, okay, tell me a sport where you sumo deadlift, like, that movement pattern is similar.
See, sumo deadlift is, you know, there's a lot more focus on the adductors. There's a good amount. I mean, it's a strong hip movement, but yep. it doesn't have the same hamstring stimulus that a regular deadlift would be. To my end, I would say there are very few athletes who need to be deadlifting, period. Like it doesn't do much. Do something with actual triple extension if you really want to get that. Do something with a knee bend, you know, like a squat or a box jump or some appropriate plyos if what you're looking for is explosiveness in your legs. For me, the deadlift is just fun because I like lifting heavy weights.
Yeah,
that's great. Period, full stop. But as silly as that sounds, though, like from an athletic standpoint, there's a lot to be said for that. And a lot to be said for just giving athletes and giving people wins that they like, ways that they enjoy training. It gets heavy weight in my hand. It's a good way to start the workout. I like the feeling. I like the headspace that you get into before a heavy lift. I think even the aggressiveness that it gives me that one day in the gym when I have to go in there and deadlift is something that's good for my headspace because it's missing in a lot of the other type of training that I do. And right now, since I'm not really training for anything specifically, I think it's really important that athletes as much as the physical side of things can deteriorate if you don't use it, for athletes, a lot of the mental side of it deteriorates if you don't use it. If you switch from one sport to another, or get away from sport, and you don't have anything that lets you be that sort of aggressive, hyper-focused or anything else, you start to lose that mindset. It starts to go blunt. So for me, it's keeping that side of my brain sharp. It's keeping that side of my attitude and keeping that side of my overall athletic performance as sharp as it can get, knowing that, you know, with the sumo deadlift, you've got about a quarter second to decide as soon as you touch the bar whether or not 700 pounds is going to move. Because if it doesn't, if you don't approach it that way, you don't visualize, you don't go through that whole system in your head where you picture yourself actually about to start the movement, you picture how it's going to be, you picture the first couple like milliseconds as the bar leaves the floor, you don't go through that exercise, you lose the ability to do that. And I think it's important. Yep. So I think in a lot of my, I don't even want to call it training right now, I'll just call it exercise since there's no goal. A lot of it is trying to keep everything sharp and keep everything fresh, no matter what it takes to do that.
I appreciate that. A good heavy deadlift really just puts some pep in your step.
It does. It does.
I think there's a big internet divide on team sumo versus team conventional. And there's a lot of shitting going on in the sumo. And it's like, okay, yes, I can do that. It hurts my back. So are you coming at me because I can't do that because it literally hurts my back. And so this makes me feel good. And it's something I can put up heavy weight on.
Also, dude, it's all stupid. Yeah. I mean, like, okay, look, a barbell is an arbitrarily designed tool of an arbitrarily designed diameter standing on top of arbitrarily designed plates. You know, ways of, the whole thing is made up.
Yeah.
I mean, and the thing is, like, not everybody is built for a deadlift either. People are different heights. How can you say that somebody who's 5 feet tall and somebody who's 6'9" are doing the same lift? I mean, it's just not. It's all silly.
Have you seen the old pictures of, like, men's weightlifting clubs back before barbells were really what they are now?
Yeah.
They're just, like, picking up, like, circular objects and, like, balancing it. And they're all, like, in man thongs hanging out with, like, goatees. I would do anything for a weightlifting club like that.
That is the future I want. And like, we should start a chain, man.
Dude, we're all down at like a shipping yard, just like lifting up like heavy metal gears, like hoop, hee, ho, hum. Like, I would kill.
Dude, that would be true. And like, everyone's got to wear like loafers or whatever else because I don't even know what they were wearing. And the only
moccasins.
Like, yeah, exactly. And the gym store is just like singlets that are made of like leopard print.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen, I can't remember his name, but the video pops up on the internet every once in a while. He was a Russian strongman and he worked in the circus and they show him doing juggling acts with 70 pound metal spheres.
Yeah.
And he would juggle like multiple of them at the same time. And he tosses the ball to somebody in the crowd. And it, like, cripples the man. It absolutely cripples the man because you watch the show, like, hey, guys, this isn't fake weight.
Yeah.
That, to me, like, I've always dreamed of. Like, I always tell people when I'm retired, I will spend most of my time in the backyard, like, digging holes and lifting rocks in front of my wife and children just to show my alpha male syndrome. Yeah. Just like, you see that big rock that Dad lifts? and I have these 1,000-pound stumps on the side of the house that I just will go out, like, if I just need a little surge of energy. And I'll just go deadlift one of the stumps, and it's my favorite.
So one of my good friends, bless his memory, he is no longer with us, Bud Jeffries,
Oh, I love Bud. This is the guy. Sorry, I don't want to steal away the story, but you need to watch this video for 3 seconds.
Dude.
I love Bud Jeffries, by the way, dude. I used to DM with him all the time.
Dude, yeah.
I don't know if it will load. When it gets loading, let us know, Ryan. Say what were you saying about Bud?
Bud, man, what I always loved about Bud was Bud realized that sport and strength sport especially was meant to be about spectacle. Oh, here we go.
I mean, dude, this is so insane. This is a Bud Jeffries type thing.
Exactly. Strength is about – sport is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be about spectacle. It's supposed to be about pushing human limits. That's why it exists at the end of the day. I mean, that's why sport is popular. This is no more or less a sport than strongman or powerlifting or anything else. Or the Olympics. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, who cares what he's doing? It's cool.
Yeah.
It's impressive. No,
you're going to see me in 10 years doing this exact thing. Bud was so impressive where he would do like strongman yoga. That blew my mind. Like there was nothing really, but he would like put himself in like a side balance while holding like a chunk of metal that weighed like 150 pounds.
Yeah.
But dude, when he would do like the Zerker carries in front while dragging stuff behind him with like 600 pounds and stuff.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Exactly. Unbelievable.
And, you know, I think, I don't know, I got to say sometimes what people like about having all their lifts be consistent and everything else is that they feel like, okay, I have a frame of reference. Oh, okay. Yeah. Like, I know what this guy is doing because I've tried it. Okay, cool. You know, like maybe there is something to be said. And certainly in organized sport, you need that absolute frame of reference. But when it comes to everything else, like I said, the point of strength sport is to have a little bit of spectacle, to have fun, to push human limits. And to do things that are meant to be just even subjectively impressive. Yeah. And so that's why, like, you know, when you see somebody, like, you know, see someone who's like 5 feet tall and, you know, sumo deadlifting and it's like some ungodly amount of weight, but they move it that far and people go, oh, that's, you know, that's BS. Who cares? It's still spectacle. It's still kind of cool. Like, do I consider that as tough as, like, you know, me moving it like this far off the ground? Like, no, absolutely not.
Dude, admittedly, some of my favorite things to watch on the internet is when you see like the midget powerlifters that put 4 plates on and do a squat. Like they move 6 inches, but it's insane.
It's insane. So, also, do you follow much like old school powerlifting, or anything else?
What would be your definition of old school powerlifting? Like back in the day?
Yeah, back in the day, and now even just
going type stuff.
Yeah, and now leading more into like what's still equipped lifting, you know, benching and bench shirts and things like that.
I don't like that.
Yeah. So there's this guy now, Jimmy Kolb is his name. Yeah. And he is like one of the few guys out there who's still like lifting big weight in full bench shirts and everything else. So he you know, and bench shirts are like thick, thick canvas material and, you know, poly and all that. You can barely touch your chest with 600 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, you put that, it's just, he benched 1,400 pounds. And this is, and people are like, oh man, look at the range of motion on that. And it moved and blah, blah, blah.
The fact that his bones didn't cripple.
Exactly. Exactly. You got 1,400 pounds in your hands. That is twice what most of us could dream of deadlifting. And I mean, all the little bones in the hands, the fact that the shirt is crushing his chest and all that, to me, that's just, it's ungodly. So you see a lot of people sniping at that going, okay, yeah, you think this is an easy way to lift, but you don't realize how incredibly,
most people will be broken just putting the outfit on.
Oh my god, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Dude, there was this guy named Tom, not, I can't remember his name. So I was at Malibu Fitness, I was a trainer there, and I'm deadlifting, I'm getting to the high fours. This is young me, I'm fucking pumped.
Yeah.
And this guy comes up, he's a thin, kind of spindly older man. He was a personal trainer there, and he would show up every day on his old dirt bike. That's how he got to the gym. And I was like, this guy's just a bum. Tom, I cannot remember. He was a WWE wrestler, held the world record in deadlift. And I didn't know this. And he comes up. He's like, hey, man, you should actually deadlift off your midfoot. You're kind of way back in your heels. And I was like, all right, whatever, man. And then later on, someone comes up to me and goes, dude, you know that dude used to hold the world record in the deadlift? And I was like, what? And I go on to find out about this guy. I don't know how he had the transformation because he used to wrestle for the WWE and everything. dude used to be a giant, and now he come down to this size. Like, he just shrunk over the years, but like absolutely unbelievable. And I don't know, like when I saw his body, he had like a couple little frame points where you could tell he used to be a beast. His bone structure was different and everything like that. But I honestly go back and I watch videos more so of the old school powerlifting than I do now.
Yeah.
And that stuff's like by far the most impressive stuff. Like Ed Cohen back in the day, that stuff blew my mind.
Okay, so just to not to take over here for a second, but I think this whole conversation, you know, early on in the whole conversation, we were talking about, okay, what does hybrid actually mean? Is it just a buzzword? Is this, that, the other? I think to me, this whole conversation just kind of articulates it, though, is being able to speak the language and understand strength sport, understand endurance, understand this entire spectrum, and appreciate and respect the types of athleticism that goes into each of it, and appreciate and respect what it takes to actually excel at it and have enough exposure to it that you know the frame of reference, you know the field you're jumping into. And I think that's the big thing. It's not just, and we can get more into like what we actually think defines a hybrid athlete, not just a hybrid fan, but I think it really is understanding what it takes to master any one of these parameters. What it takes, it's not just dabbling in a little bit of everything. It's not just saying, hey, you know what? I lift and now I just got on an exercise bike. Am I hybrid?
Yeah.
You know, it's actually saying, all right, I know what the absolute elite ragged edge of athleticism is in each. I know what it's like to work for that. And I've shown that I can actually put this together and try this and succeed.
Is everyone back?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I think your satellite thing went out, but I get where you're going with this, and let's just go into it. But by the way, the guy's name was Tom McGee. You got to look him up.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember Tom McGee, but that was the guy who came up to me, and I feel like a dick to this day. Because I totally wrote him off. But I think, you know, so the reason why I wanted to contact you is because I think almost this is not going to happen. But if you had like a council or like a board of hybrid sport, you would be one of the people I'd consider to be on that board. Like 100%. You sit down, we have got like five members of the board. And all of a sudden, if there's an event coming up or some kind of competition, the Olympics of something, you could now all of a sudden we could all weigh in and say, hey, listen, like, well, there was this level of performance and this kind of test and this kind of endurance. What does that really mean? And I guess like when it started, you said it used to just be called being in shape. It's like, and now like what used to be kind of like the decathlon, which was just like, can you run, jump, lift, throw, or not even lift, like just throw. Now is spread into this open space of, you know, can you marathon? Can you triathlon? Can you powerlift? Can you such and such? And it's spreading so much. And I really want to know from somebody like in your standpoint, it doesn't seem like you're competing anymore. It seems like more you're on the advisory standpoint of coaching, educating. How do you define hybrid? Because I know you wrote a book. But like, how do you define hybrid? Has it changed since you wrote your book? Have all these new events that have been popping up and new styles of athletes, this new internet era of just like feats of athleticism and strength and everything come up? Like, where is the seed for you in this? And where do you consider the ceiling to be?
So the whole idea behind hybrid athletics and what differentiated it from just, again, sport, like, back before this, what would you have considered a rugby player? What would you consider a rugby back? They're pretty strong. They're fast. They got good endurance. Are they hybrid? No, they're a rugby player. Mm-hmm. I think the idea behind hybrid, and to me what still differentiates it, is an athlete who is developing parameters of athleticism that don't explicitly support each other and competing and or partaking in different sports. So if you have an athlete,
the two sports are going against you, like you wouldn't necessarily say, like you could do basketball and football, like high school athletes, but you're talking about sports that are direct competitors of each other. Like you would only do one or you would only do the other. There's not like a crossover. And as a hybrid athlete, you can do that.
Exactly. So you're an athlete who will go compete in a triathlon, in an Ironman triathlon, and then you will go compete in an OCR event that has a heavy strength component, or you will go compete in a powerlifting meet or something else. So you're actually training for these two things. And arguably, if you had just gone all in 100% training for one of them, it would have been significantly easier.
Yeah,
and nobody would have objected. Everyone would have said that's smart training, because a hybrid athlete, basically, you are concurrently training and improving in two events that don't support each other.
Yeah,
and that's been the crux of it.
But out of curiosity, I'll pose it to you this way: so the greatest athlete at the Olympics is the decathlete. They say the greatest athlete at the Olympics is the decathlete because he or she is doing so much. Mm-hmm. Now, just to maybe create some direction and define things, is there an event or any combination of events that you would say is like the version of that? Like,
I would say if an event like High Rocks had heavier lifts in it, yeah, and had some heavier implements, that would be about as close as we could get right now. Because yeah, what I really appreciate about that format is that it deliberately, like, you have so many different body types and athletic backgrounds that come into it and excel, that in and of itself makes me go, aha, that's interesting. Because you have, you know, you have Chris from an ultra running background who's out there, you know, like qualifying for, you know, getting into the Barkley marathons this year. And that's like somebody who is a complete, like, that's the end of the spectrum that they come from. And then, you know, like I said, on the women's side, you've got, who's it, Jacoby, who comes from the world record. Yeah, powerlifting background, or has done powerlifting recently. So, like, to me, and I just know the women's side better because of Ariana. But, you know, I mean, it's the same thing on the men's side. Like, you get individuals from, like yourself, you know, you come from a lot of different backgrounds. You come at it from a lot of different angles, and you find that you can excel. And you're going, all right, this is interesting now, because you have it's not just the same profile that excels over and over again. Yep. You have athletes with different emphases. Like, to me, again, like something like a High Rocks with a greater strength component, I think would start to embody it, where you can't have a weakness in your game.
Well, I tried to convince them when I first, like, initially got involved. I said, listen, I know you guys really have to push this initial initiative, like this original one, to make sure that you guys just get it off the ground smoothly. But I was like, you should come up with a High Rocks X. I was like, you need to get that with like the X factor. Like, you get there and there is a tremendous amount of force needs to be exerted to accomplish this task. Like, yeah, you know, and what's that? Yeah. Yeah. I think that'd be spectacular. And it's interesting where I'm at least at the point where I'm probably a couple years from ending this whole thing for myself. Like, I don't want to be one of the, what I call those bad dads, the dudes that are just like never let go of competing. And I put all my eggs in the basket of High Rocks. I said I was ready to drop out and go towards the Olympics. And I saw, yeah, I did. I let go. And then all of a sudden, a qualifier that I was going for, I was not able to compete in. But basically, I recognized, I was like, okay, so this is having this uptick. And I believe if it's ever going.
Yes. Zoom freeze. Come on.
We got it.
Come on. Come on, bud.
You'll be back.
You're frozen. Elsa got him.
That took me a second.
Should we remove him? Come back? He's got a training camp going on. So I think there's like six or seven people staying at his house, and they're all sucking off the lonesome Wi-Fi.
Off the TV's Wi-Fi. Oh, there we go. Oh, it's just us.
All right. Just us, Alex.
Hey, so man.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Duke University for undergrad.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Durham, North Carolina, man. It was a
huge game over the weekend.
Yeah. I don't even really follow Duke University sports as much, believe it or not, man. I guess I got burnt out on it. Actually, it was funny, though, because that was actually a big part of what got me away from sport to begin with, is you go to a D1 school And, you know, you're in high school. And I'm like, all right, great. You know, I can play all these different sports. And you go to a D1 school. And they're like, actually, no. You suck way too badly at any of them. You can't even be on our club teams. And you're like, all right, I guess I'll just drink my way into oblivion then.
Well, so that's what I was going to ask. Did you go to Duke for a scholarship, like with athletics, or your grades were just so great?
No. Yeah, it was mostly grades and test scores and all that. I would have dreamed to be able to get any kind of athletic scholarship. But part of that was my exercise ADD as well. You know, I always think firmly if I had focused on one or two sports, probably would have been a lot better at them. But that wouldn't have been the enjoyment for me. And, you know, it's funny going into this conversation, I think that was a really, really formative. And where a lot of this got started was this whole idea of not having to pigeonhole yourself into one thing. Mm-hmm. That's the enjoyment, like I said, is learning new languages and also being able to talk to all these different athletes who understand, you know, different mindsets and can speak to the history of powerlifting and the history of marathon running and talk about the history of the Tour de France and all that. Like, to me, that's all fascinating. I love athletes of different backgrounds and, you know, sports of different, completely different mindsets and histories. And yeah, I don't know. I could never be too much of a fan of any one particular area.
So are you interconnected with the High Rocks world now? You're an accomplished author and it sounds like you maybe coach a couple of the High Rocks athletes.
Yep. I do. We're actually like a High Rocks affiliate now. I actually might be speaking at the High Rocks master course in December.
Okay.
You know, they offer those before the events. So yeah, no. And I love the sport. Love that team over there. I love the way they're going. I really like Hunter's idea of High Rocks X though, where you just throw some like heavy strongman events in there.
Hunter calling in.
Oh yeah.
Right. Put him in. Bud, Hunter. Hey, you're live on you're within the show now. You're talking in.
Well, I'm sorry, boys, dude. Our internet completely just went out here in the cabins. I think, unfortunately, right as we start to get to the meat and potatoes of this thing, we may have to do a part two.
Okay.
Yeah.
With it?
You got it, dude. I'm really sorry.
That's all right. Alex and I just sat in complete silence because all of us are just, we don't have any topics to talk about. We're very boring people without you.
Listen, if you guys just want to close it out, chat a little bit and just let everyone know that we'll do a part two. I don't know why, but just looks like everybody's internet just shut down.
Dude, it happens.
That's all right.
I'm sorry, guys. But Alex, dude, you're an absolute legend, man. I think we do deserve to have a part two, man, because honestly, there's so many questions we had. You were the most popular person that we've ever asked about. So I have freaking dozens of questions that people want to know about your mindset and approach. So I'm sorry, brother.
Tell you what, man, let's just, we kind of laid the groundwork. We talked, you know, shot the shit about some stuff. Now we can just kind of dig into it next time.
Yeah, for sure, brother, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely, brother. Get that internet. Now, don't get that internet sorted. Go outside. Hell with that. You're in a nice area.
Go chop some wood.
Yeah, go chop some wood.
Boy. Talk to you soon, dude. Have a great Monday, dude. I'll be in touch.
All right. Later, guys. See you, man. All right, Alex, where can we find you? Your High Rocks coach, your accomplished author, is your point of contact Instagram only? Do you have email? What's your website?
So I think that's part of it. I'm not that easy to reach. Instagram, I'm always on Instagram, just alex.biata. And there's like contact forms to the website there. That's the best way, man, is email. I'm still really bad about this. I don't have a YouTube channel. You know, don't do any of that, really. I think honestly, man, for me, so much now is just like heads down working with my own clients and trying to focus on educational stuff. And that's why I, you know, sometimes have a smaller internet presence, I think, than I probably could. But that's the best way to reach me. And I will actually, like I said, be speaking in December. And I got a couple other little engagements coming up.
All right. Is that one of the High Rocks affiliate gyms in the U.S. or in the U.K.? I know they're huge over in the U.K. with High Rocks affiliate gyms, and we're slowly growing in the U.S.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be actually at the High Rocks race, I believe, right beforehand.
Okay.
November
is Chicago, Navy Pier.
Yeah. Yeah.
That one. Yeah. Well, then I get to meet you there. I'm doing High Rocks doubles.
Are you really?
Yes, sir.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So, all right. How long have you actually competed or done High Rocks before?
I got in, I found out about it in 2019 and okay. I competed at the end of the year of 2019. Then 2020 was all of COVID. I had signed up for it, but we were pushed back, I think, two or three times. But all in all, I've done doubles, I've done singles. I qualified for High Rocks 2021. Sure. Or 2022 in Las Vegas. And I got in with an hour 30. So they have really tightened up that belt as far as like qualifications now. So an hour 30 is like, you might as well get back in the parking lot. You got to get sub hour in order to get into these qualifications for Worlds.
Yeah, man. And I don't want to just like take up time now. Shoot, we want to get out. But yeah, it's crazy how much this sport has evolved. And I think, like anything else, once people start really digging into optimization of it and, you know, athletes really start coming into their own, I think it's been really cool to watch. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about like hybrid and how this became a hybrid thing later, but it's really shown that it's really helped given this whole, you know, what was just a crazy concept 15 years ago, really helped given it legs. And I don't know. I appreciate it because as much noise as there is right now about hybrid and it's become a buzzword and everything else, the thing I keep coming back to is that it's actually really exciting because it's getting people doing something that I only dreamed about 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's finally like, to me, the style of training I love and, you know, watching people do all this kind of stuff and excel at all this kind of stuff and have that be the general consensus. Honestly, the biggest thing for me, the most gratifying thing is watching how much healthier it makes the average trainee. Mm-hmm. And people think
High Rocks has saved people's lives. I know Mark and Lauren Howe talk about how, you know, they're on recovery and, you know, they've spoken their story, but it's like, it's transformed their lives to where it's like something that they can now work for and can you know fight for another day for battling what they're going through and just something to put their mind for and going towards and training and giving them something to look forward to basically.
Yeah. And if it gets people out there and it gets people like lifting weights and going out and running and getting outside and that whole spectrum, like that's health. And that's why I think it's come full circle at this point is suddenly actual exercise is cool again.
Yeah. And it's taken from like, you could only watch the CrossFit games and it's like, okay, I'm not at that level, but I'm in decent shape. Like, what can I do? Okay. I don't want to get muddy. I don't want to get shocked. Okay. Yeah. But I got more strength than the average bear. Like, what can I do? And then now High Rocks has come into our world.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, I could do this. I'm not at I can't snatch 250, you know, 200, 300 pounds above my head, but I could push a dang sled.
Well, and I think the other thing as well, and I think what really speaks to me is if you can lift that kind of weight, you don't have to completely give that up to still feel like you'd be good at it.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that's the other big thing is it's a really hard sell when somebody really, really enjoys one end of the spectrum or the other, this whole, you know, hybrid idea leading into like hybrid racing and all that, it rewards it. It doesn't really punish it. And I think that's been really important because it keeps the idea. And I think that's why so many of these like challenges and, you know, run a mile and deadlift this and all that. I think that's why that gets inspiring to people though, is because you say, all right, you know, who I am now and the way I picture myself and the athletic parameters I think I have can still be rewarded in doing something cool.
So. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. We're going to do the end of part one right here. Alex, we'll have you on again. We'll start part two. I'm sure Hunter will reach out and sync up your guys' schedules.
Yep.
We'll get you back on here. But thanks so much for watching today, y'all. And enjoy the rest of your Mondays. Crush the week. And we will see you later. Bye-bye.